Hello, Tom Tilley here. Welcome to the Hack Podcast. So far this election, we've focused mostly on what Labor and Liberal are promising. Today, it's time to hear from the Greens.
The environment and the economy are working in the same direction now.
But at $60 billion of exports, how are you going to replace that in an economy that's almost in recession already?
With renewable energy exports.
That interview with Greens leader Richard Di Natale coming up in just a moment, so you can decide if they deserve your vote this election. First up, very excited to say, one of the world's most famous conservationists, Jane Goodall.
The biggest problem that we have as environmental activists is to fight the power of money.
On Triple J.
Dr. Jane Goodall shot to fame in the 1960s for living amongst chimpanzees deep in the Tanzanian forest. Since that groundbreaking research, she's been travelling the world, spreading the message about protecting animals and their habitats. And she's still doing that, even though she's 85 years old now. Tonight, she's going to be speaking in Sydney, then she'll go to Melbourne and Adelaide in the coming days. Now, in case you don't know much about her, here's Stephen Stockwell with some of the key moments of Jane Goodall's journey.
Determined to uncover the secrets of the chimps, in 1960, Miss Jane Goodall arrives in Tanzania.
Jane was 26 years old, sent into the middle of the jungle, more or less by herself, to live in a hut and study chimpanzees.
Her discoveries here will startle the scientific world and lead to the possible redefinition of the word man.
What's incredible about Jane is that she had no scientific training. She hadn't been to uni, she hadn't done any field work like this before. That's actually one of the reasons anthropologist Lewis Leakey sent her there after she arrived in Kenya and hit him up for a job. He thought she'd be able to observe these animals without any hang-ups, expectations, or prejudices.
When I arrived at the Gombe Stream Reserve, I felt that at long last, my childhood ambition was being realised. Always I had wanted to go out into the field and study animals.
Before Jane went into the jungle, we didn't really know much about chimpanzees, despite sharing 96% of our genetic code with them. By following them around and documenting them over years and years, Jane learnt they weren't vegetarian, as people had thought. They'd actually hunt and kill larger animals, and they'd create basic tools to fish termites out of nests.
When he strips leaves off a twig, he's actually modifying a natural object to suit it to a specific purpose, and he is thus making a tool.
Jane also found these animals were capable of deliberate killing, witnessing a war between two groups and even seeing dominant females killing the young of others to make sure they stayed on top. But there were much greater dangers around.
Today, outside this tiny 30-square-mile oasis of forest, the trees have gone. People have moved right up to the boundaries of the park.
After seeing heaps of trees cut down around the patch of bush she'd been living in, Jane became a passionate conservationist, setting up the Jane Goodall Institute to help protect chimpanzees and primates.
Even the chimps at Gombe, although they're perfectly safe within their national park, it's a very tiny national park.
Jane's picked up dozens of awards for her conservation work and a bunch of honorary doctorates from universities. She's written a heap of books and been the subject of more than 40 films. She formed quite strong bonds with the chimpanzees she met in Tanzania, giving them names instead of scientific codes, even playing with some of the younger ones.
Flo is, by our standards, a most ugly female. Flo's daughter, Fifi, still goes around with her family, and although she is now endowed with the charms of youth, she has many of her mother's features and will be no beauty in a few years' time. Little Flint, like all chimp babies, is packed full of charm and endearment.
Hack on Triple J.
All right, let's speak to the woman herself, Jane Goodall. Thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
That's okay.
Can you tell us about the first moment you really got up close to the chimpanzees?
It was gradual, you know, it wasn't a sudden thing. And the first chimpanzee who began to lose his fear of me was David Greybeard. And he had this beautiful white beard. And, you know, gradually he let me get closer and closer. And we don't know why that he was less afraid than the others. But, you know, eventually he's the one who showed me that chimpanzees used and made tools. I was able to watch him termite fishing without him running away. He taught me that chimps occasionally hunt and eat meat. And he helped introduce me to the others in the forest, because when I approached a group that was ready to run and David was there sitting calmly, they must have decided Well, she's not so scary after all.
Wow. Jane, ultimately, how do you think that research you did in the Tanzanian jungle changed our knowledge of life?
Well, for example, when I'd been out there for 2 years, my mentor, Lewis Leakey, told me I had to get a degree. And he got a place for me to do a PhD at Cambridge, even though I hadn't been to college. I was the 8th person in Cambridge history to be given a PhD without having a previous degree. But anyway, when I got to Cambridge, they told me I'd done everything wrong. First, I shouldn't have given the chimps names. That wasn't scientific. They should have had numbers. And secondly, I couldn't talk about them having personalities or minds or emotions because those were unique to us. But luckily, I had a teacher when I was a child who taught me that for all their wise learning, these professors in this respect were totally and utterly completely wrong, and that was my dog, Rusty. You cannot share your life in a meaningful way with a dog, a cat, a pig, a bird, and not know that, of course, we are not the only beings on this planet with personalities, minds, and above all, emotions.
Do you value the lives of all animals equally, or do you value them based on their intelligence?
No, I think it's not a question of valuing them based on anything. It's a question of, when we're talking about wild animals, that each one has a special place in the ecosystem. It's like a tapestry, you know, with each species being like a little strand. And sometimes you remove a small strand and it may seem, oh gosh, that species was very insignificant. So if it becomes extinct, it doesn't matter. But in fact, it may be, for example, the main food source of another species, and this can produce a ripple effect and end up destroying the whole ecosystem.
You're listening to Jane Goodall. She's one of the world's best-known conservationists, and she's talking about her research and time living in Gombe in the Tanzanian jungle, where she closely recorded the lives and behaviours of chimpanzees. And Jane's message of conservation has never been more important. More than 1 million animal and plant species are currently threatened with extinction. That's more than ever in human history. That's according to a big UN intergovernmental report that came out yesterday. I'm going to come back to Jane and get her thoughts on species destruction in just a moment. First, let's hear Joe Lauder explaining just how dire the situation's becoming.
Biodiversity is important in its own right. Biodiversity is important for human well-being, and we humans are destroying it.
That's the alarming take-home message from this major report into the natural world. It sets out the impacts humans are having on the planet, that we are causing the 6th mass extinction and destroying our Earth. Ewan Ritchie is an associate professor in ecology at Deakin Uni.
Being an ecologist and a conservation scientist, I've known for many years the dire predicament that our environment's facing. But I guess to see it in such crystal and chilling detail is really quite upsetting.
The Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, which I won't say again, is a group of hundreds of international scientists brought together by the UN who've collated all the best research into this issue. It took them 3 years. UN says it's the most comprehensive health report we have on our planet.
It's probably one of the most important documents in the history of humanity, and I don't think that's really overstating it, because it really shows what's happening to Earth and the consequences of that for us if we don't do something about this.
So, according to the report, 1 million of the world's species are at threat of extinction. That's a quarter of all species that scientists could assess. More specifically, over 40% of amphibian species, around a third of reef-forming corals, and more than a third of all marine mammals are now under threat. And all of these changes are accelerating and spiralling out of control.
When one species disappears, that may have a knock-on effect and cause other species to go extinct.
What are we doing that's causing this?
By far the biggest threat is habitat loss and modification. So the areas that we're clearing for food production, to grow cities and so forth, they're really taking a very heavy toll on species. Invasive species as well. So we know in the case of Australia that the introduction of red foxes and feral cats has had a devastating effect on our wildlife. Disease is becoming a really big issue as well, pollution.
And on top of all of this is climate change, which the report says is exacerbating all of these issues. And this doesn't just affect the natural world. We rely on biodiversity for clean water, pollination, fresh air, basically all our survival.
It's not just the numbats or the mountain pygmy possums that are in the firing line, it's us.
I'm Tim Bashara and I'm the Federal Policy Director at the Wilderness Society.
This is also how Tim described himself.
As a conservationist and a bit of a professional sort of doomsayer.
Tim says Australia's got a bad reputation for driving our unique flora and fauna to the brink.
We are punching above our weight in extinction. We are not punching above our weight in conservation.
When it comes to what we can do about this, both Tim and Ewan say we need political action fast.
Most people want more done for the environment. And regardless of someone's political leanings, whether they're progressive or conservative, they want more done. If we get our act together and deal with it at the scale that it needs to be dealt with, then we don't need to be so grim.
Hack Triple J.
Tim Bashara, National Policy Director at the Wilderness Institute. Ending that report from Joe Lauder. Pretty scary to hear that the pace of natural destruction is up 100 times. It's 100 times faster than the natural rate over the last 10 million years. We have the highly esteemed conservationist, Dr. Jane Goodall, here with us on Hack. Jane, you've been talking about that destruction of nature since the 60s. What's your reaction to this latest report from the UN? And how do you hope that other people respond to this kind of information?
It's like a wake-up call. Let's get together now and try and solve some of the problems before it's too late.
So, Jane, there are hundreds of thousands of young people listening to this interview. What should they do personally?
The main message is every single one of us makes some impact on the planet every single day, and we have a choice as to what kind of impact we want to make. And so when young people get together like that and roll up their sleeves and start taking action, then there's hope for the planet.
And where do you think the focus should be? Is it most importantly on land clearing? Is it about meat consumption? Is it about the way we use resources? What do you think are the most important issues to focus on for people in developed countries?
They're all important. They're all interrelated. That's the trouble. You know, one depends on the other, depends on the other.
Jane, I was thinking about the timeline of your personal journey and also tracking it with the world population and realised that the world population has more than doubled since you went into the jungle for the first time around 1960. Around that time, there were 3 billion people in the world. There are now 7.5 billion. Do you think there's any way for the Earth to sustain this many humans without speeding up animal species decline?
Not unless we start changing three important things. First of all, we must try and alleviate poverty, because when you're very poor, if you live out, you know, in the environment, you destroy it to try and live. So that's one problem we have to get together and solve. The second is the unsustainable lifestyle of most of the rest of us. And finally, as you mentioned, it's population growth. A lot of people don't want to tackle that. They feel it's politically insensitive. If we carry on with business as usual, that'll be the end of life on Earth as we know it.
Jane, school children have been staging globally coordinated mass protests to call for greater action on climate change, but conservative politicians here in Australia have lectured them for skipping class. What's your message to those politicians?
Well, message to both. First of all, you know, I want to know what percentage of children are marching just to have fun and skip a day of school. I think the leaders are passionate. So what's needed there is for the leaders' passion to rub off on the other children and then to follow up with action. So if you just march and then go back to school, it's not going to make any difference. But if you roll up your sleeves and do something about it and not just leave it to the politicians, you know, we're the consumers. If we don't consume products made by companies that we think are doing a bad job environmentally, they'll change, and it's happening. And somehow we have to support those politicians who try to do it right.
Do you think those politicians chiding the children are pretty narrow-minded?
Well, they just want to carry on with business as usual, don't they? Usually there's a lot of corruption mixed up in these decisions. And in a democracy, we elect the politicians. So if a massive amount of people elect politicians who don't care or who refuse to support environmental protection, that means that we haven't properly educated people who are voting like that.
Jane, it's been a real honour to speak to you, and it's so impressive to see the work that you continue to do spreading this message around the world. Thanks so much for coming to Australia, and thank you for speaking to the listeners of Triple J.
Well, thank you for giving me the chance to share what I truly believe is a very important message.
Hack
on Triple J.
Jane Goodall on the text line. Jane, you're an inspiration to us all. Thank you for your lifetime of dedication to our world. Another listener says, leaders of this planet need to step up to the plate and put our biodiversity first. Stephanie, you say, Dr. Goodall inspired my career as an environmental scientist and I graduate in 2 weeks.
Hack.
Look, I think it's a very dire warning.
Triple J.
Now, of course, if you want to go see Jane Goodall speak, she's in Sydney tonight in just over an hour speaking at Darling Harbour. She'll also be speaking in Melbourne on Saturday, Adelaide on Tuesday. And her talk is called Rewind the Future, brought to you by Think Inc. Hit their website for tickets. All right, let's speak to a well-known local conservationist, Professor Tim Flannery. He wrote a book in the 90s called The Future Eaters, which made big waves. And by 2007, he was awarded Australian of the Year. He's currently the chief counsellor at the Climate Council, a community-funded organisation that provides information on climate change. Tim Flannery, thanks for joining us. How important has Jane Goodall's voice been in the conservation movement?
Well, she's a giant. You know, she has contributed more than almost anyone. I mean, you'd have to look to the David Attenboroughs of the world to find people who've perhaps contributed more. So, she's a giant. But it's important to remember she started off just as a young woman doing a project in the jungle, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing to hear her story. We were just talking about the intergovernmental report that says we're destroying nature at 100 times the speed that we have been compared to the last 10 million years. What does the reality of that look like here in Australia?
Look, the impacts are pretty severe here. You know, just in my lifetime, since I first dived on the Great Barrier Reef, you know, 70% of that reef has died. We've got impacts on with species. There's been two mammals gone extinct just in the last decade or so, one on Christmas Island and one on an island on the Great Barrier Reef. We've seen enormous changes in the abundance of animals, some species going from quite abundant now to very rare, some of our frog species, for example. I really see it as a person. The Melbourne that I grew up in as a kid had lots of frogs, lots of lizards all around the place. Today you just don't see them.
Mm. Queensland toughened their land clearing laws last year, and federal Labor have promised to strengthen laws in other states to make them similar to Queensland. Are those laws going to make much difference?
If people abide by them, absolutely they will. We need to stop land clearing in this country, full stop. It's damaging the Great Barrier Reef, it is not profitable, and it's really destroying our biodiversity. The big problem is that some people keep on making it easy to just go around the edge of the law or to delay justice. You know, we had a case in New South Wales a couple of years back where an environmental officer was actually murdered by a farmer who was intent on land clearing. So, you know, we've got to get people to abide by these laws.
Tim, for people listening now, what's your advice? What do you think's the best thing they could do to help slow down the speed of our culling of so many species?
Well, you know, I think that everyone, you have to look at your own potential, really, and you never quite know what that potential is till you challenge yourself. You know, I'm just enormously inspired by the story of a young couple from Melbourne who were very young zookeepers at Melbourne Zoo who decided to go to Papua New Guinea to protect tree kangaroos in the northern part of Papua New Guinea. 15 years later, they're running a multi-million dollar organisation that's protecting an entire mountain range and benefiting the lives of 50,000 Papua New Guineans. You know, and they were just ordinary people.
Yeah,
so
amazing.
Don't underestimate what you can do. Get out there, choose what your passion is, you know. If you want to get the plastics out of the ocean, I say go for it. You know, we as a species have managed to get most of the fish out of the sea. If we can do that, we can get the plastics out, you know. We have to have faith we can do some of these big things and then get on with the hard job of doing it.
Yeah, so many fronts for people to attack when it comes to cleaning up our planet and slowing down the destruction of nature. Professor Tim Flannery, great to speak to you on Hack.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
Young people at the moment are being screwed over. What we're seeing is intergenerational theft on a grand scale.
On Triple J.
You are listening to Hack, and the federal election's now a week and a half away. It's getting close, thank goodness. The pollies have been flooding in on Hack. Let's continue the environmental theme by finally doing a big interview with the Greens leader, Richard Di Natale. Just before we do that, I'll give you some of their key policies. Phase out coal and move to 100% renewable energy by 2030. That's more than double Labor's target. Create 180,000 new jobs in renewable energy. Free uni, free TAFE, free dental care, and decriminalising personal drug use. Let's get the Greens leader on and put him through his paces. Richard Di Natale, thanks for joining us on Hack.
Pleasure.
We've just heard from Jane Goodall and Tim Flannery imploring young people to help save our planet from habitat and species destruction. We've heard you talk a lot about climate change, which is obviously an important piece of that puzzle. But how do the Greens plan to wind back the level of habitat destruction in Australia?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to fund it. The investment's going to mean an end to native forest logging. We're going to stop land clearing. We're going to make sure that we preserve our habitat. We're going to create wildlife corridors.
One of your key policy platforms is to phase out coal by 2030. It's still our second biggest export earner, and our economy's already teetering on recession. So are you prepared to put us into recession to achieve your environmental policy?
No, because the environment and the economy are working in the same direction now.
But at $60 billion of exports, how are you going to replace that in an economy that's almost in recession already?
With renewable energy exports, and it's a plan for a transition over 10 years. Coal's got no long-term future. Everybody understands that. The market is saying it. The coal companies are now saying it. Places where we export coal, like Japan and South Korea, are saying we don't want coal anymore. We want to start moving towards a hydrogen-based economy.
Sure, it's about how we transition and how quickly and how we balance that with economic costs.
Well, there's huge costs if we don't act. If we don't act, we lose the Great Barrier Reef and the 70,000 jobs that depend on it. We lose the Murray-Darling Basin, which is about to run dry. They're the things that we lose if we don't act now. Huge economic costs from inaction. So let's actually use that as our starting point. We've got a plan for 100% renewable energy by 2030, a phase-out of coal by 2030, transitioning to renewable energy, solar, wind, etc., export hydrogen, and 180,000 new jobs if we do this properly.
Let's talk about the new jobs. 180,000 new jobs in renewables. Did you just pluck that number out of thin air? There's currently 18,000, so it would have to go up tenfold.
And it will go up tenfold.
But it's been hovering between 10 and 20,000 for the last 10 years.
Well, that's because we've seen two parties who have done nothing when it comes to making the transition away from coal to renewable energy.
But how does it suddenly go up tenfold?
Well, what our jobs plan would do is it'd create jobs in cleaning up coal mines. We'd establish a retail power outlet called Power Australia. We'd have household solar storage. There'd be a clean energy transition fund, an environment protection agency. And, of course, when you're talking about 100% renewables by 2030, that's jobs for electricians. It's jobs for tradies in installing wind power, solar power, large-scale batteries.
As well as moving away from coal, you're proposing to increase Newstart, offer free uni fees, more funding for public schools, dental care. They're very nice ideas, but will the Greens...
They're great ideas, Tom.
Well, yeah, but will the Greens always be a smaller protest party when you throw out so many policies that can't realistically be funded?
Who says they can't be funded, Tom? Who says?
Well, how are you going to fund
them? I know people in big boardrooms would like to continue not paying tax. That's true. These big corporations at the moment who get massive handouts from the taxpayer would like to keep getting them. And they're the choices we face. You see, Tom, in the end, there are people who are trying to tell us that we can't do these things. These are choices that we make as a society. Other countries do these things. We can do them too.
All right, we've got to keep moving. There are so many policy issues I want to get to with you, Richard Di Natale. He is, of course, the Greens leader. You're listening to Triple J's Hack program as we grill the politicians about their respective policies. Let's go back to your promise on free uni fees. Can you explain to all the tradies listening right now who are already paying a substantial proportion of other people's uni fees why they should pay more?
Well, it's also for free TAFE and uni fees.
Sure, so that's a tiny proportion. TAFE fees for an apprentice are tiny compared to someone who goes to uni for several years full time.
If you speak to a lot of tradies, TAFE fees are actually a big cost to them, and to reduce them to zero is actually a big plus. The reason that we're proposing free TAFE and uni is because when people obtain those skills, they're not just skills that are of benefit to them. There are skills that are of benefit to the entire society. See, education, having a skilled workforce, it's a public good. And the problem we've got at the moment is you've got these politicians, all of whom benefited from free education, they got cheap housing, a safe and stable climate, who are wrecking the place for people who come after them. You've got young people being screwed over because they can't afford to buy a house. We want to unashamedly have a society that values free universal education and healthcare, bringing dental care under Medicare. We want to have a society where young people who are studying can actually afford to support themselves while they're doing their degree. That means raising youth allowance by $75 a week. We can afford to do those things, Tom, if we make the right choices. We end those massive handouts to fossil fuel companies. We make sure that multinationals who are not paying tax right now start paying tax, because we don't have a tax industry. We've got a tax avoidance industry. They're choices that we can make, and it's up to people in a few days' time to decide whether they want to make those choices.
Richard Di Natale, the Greens are known for preaching from the moral high ground and being quite critical of the major parties and their unity and their misdemeanours. I wonder if your party's lost claim to that high ground. You had to dump a candidate today, Jay Desi. You're standing by an NT candidate despite a racist slur at an Indigenous Northern Territorian. The Victorian election was messy with the candidate stood down for shoplifting. Another stood down for sexual misconduct allegations. In New South Wales, there was Jeremy Buckingham, who was forced to quit the party over sexual assault allegations. Is the party a bit of a mess?
No, Tom.
But what about the personal standards of your candidates? It's been a really messy time. You've got to admit that.
Well, compared to what you've seen within the Labor and Liberal Party during this campaign.
But you're a much smaller party.
Yes, we are. And no question that what we need to do is make sure that all of our candidates uphold standards. I think there's another side to this, though, Tom. When it comes to social media, and particularly the Greens who represent young people, we have more young people standing for us, what you're getting is an environment where young people who have lived their whole life online and made silly mistakes and made those mistakes, you know, documented them while they're online. We have to recognise that if we continue to see what the other parties are doing, which is have their big dirt units trawling through every candidate's history, that you're going to start getting an environment where young people don't want to engage in politics. And right now, young people have to engage because it's their future that the current crop of politicians are messing with.
Well, if you think this is going too far, why did you dump Jay Desi?
Well, he stepped over the line and he resigned, just to be clear about that.
Surely there was party pressure.
He stood aside, and he stood aside for the right reasons because he crossed a line, and I think it was appropriate that he stood aside.
All right, the other controversy you're dealing with at the moment is your How to Vote card in the seat of Richmond. I guess people will want to know where you stand on anti-vaxxers, because on the North Coast in that seat, your party has preferenced a single-issue anti-vaxxer candidate, Tom Barnett, fourth out of the eight candidates. That's in a community with some of the lowest vaccination rates in the country. How do you feel about sending the message to that community that an anti-vaxxer is the fourth best option on the ballot paper?
Tells you about the standard of candidates. And when you're talking about, firstly, the preferences for our candidates in those electorates are made by local groups is a first point. Secondly,
so you're distancing yourself?
Our candidates, no, I'm just telling you what the reality is. Our candidates are preferencing in that electorate the Labor Party, and our preferences won't be distributed. So I think it's important to recognise that actually.
Hang on, if you're saying the preferences don't matter, then why not put him at the bottom of the How to Vote card if he's an anti-vaxxer?
Because you've got a choice between an anti-vaxxer and a Nationals MP who doesn't believe in climate change. Now,
so which is worse?
You tell me.
You tell me. You're the Greens leader.
Well,
a doctor.
Well, climate change is an existential threat. Climate change is actually a threat to all life on Earth right now.
Yeah, and, I mean, it sounds like you're like, oh, anti-vaxxing is not that bad. Climate change is the real problem here.
Tom, I have consistently argued to ensure that we have evidence-based public health policies. And as a doctor, I've consistently supported vaccination. The reality is that when you're talking about preferences that don't matter and you're talking about the difference between preferences to a party of climate deniers versus an individual who wants action on climate change but doesn't support compulsory vaccination, you're actually faced with two bad choices.
Yeah, sounds like a tricky territory, Richard Di Natale. Thank you so much for joining us on Hack today.
Thanks, Tom.
Hack, Triple J.
Richard Di Natale, Leader of the Greens, on the text line. Wasn't going to vote Greens before, might now. Well spoken and well said. Another listener says, 100% renewables within 11 years sounds a bit far-fetched. I know of a small solar farm that's still being built after 3 years. One person says, sold. First politician interview I've heard that wants everything I want and agrees on the children's future. Josh, you're not into the free uni fees. Why not?
No, I'm a qualified tradesman, and I have a lot of relatives that are university graduates, and they earn a lot more than what a qualified tradesman under wages would earn. So I don't feel like we should have to pay for them university fees.
Yeah, your tax is contributing to their uni fees. Well, they already do. The Greens just want to take it to 100%. I can understand your point of view. That's why I put that question to him. Thanks for calling in, Josh.
Thank you.
And still loads of people are texting in about Jane Goodall. A lesson in integrity, says one listener. Someone else says, I love you, Jane. You are one of the biggest inspirations in my life. Someone else says, what a champ. Not chimp, champ. She's 100% on the money.
Hack on Triple J.
That is it for today. Thank you so much for listening to the Hack Podcast. Catch you on the next one.